This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Obviously, you want to see your team win. The Knicks didn't win last night. It's not the end of the world. Stop freaking out. This doesn't mean the Mikal Bridges trade is socks. This doesn't mean the Knicks can't win a title. This doesn't mean they're garbage. They lost a game to the Warriors. But there is something I've noticed that I want to address that may be concerning to some. And it's about one specific player on the New York Knicks. I'm noticing a trend amongst this man, and I am concerned. But before I tell you who that player is, I'm curious if you could guess the man I want to identify and raise some warning signs about. Do you want to guess?
I'm going to guess, I don't know. I would say Brunson, but it can't be Brunson.
Brunson, but it can't be Brunson. Tommy Lou Gowen?
I don't know. Who is it?
My initial read is Bridges, but the fact that you asked the question, it's not him.
I know who it is. It's Josh Hart.
It's Josh Hart. What's your guess, Sean?
Oh, I was going to go Bridges.
It is Josh Hart.
Wow, okay.
And I want to address it. So last night, the Knicks are down by one. Their bench did a pretty good job keeping them in the game early part of the fourth quarter. And Josh Hart was having a miserable game.
Yeah.
And look, it happens. I think he struggles, especially when Kat doesn't play.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, best wishes to Kat. Hopefully everything's okay.
Right.
Best of luck with him and his family. But Josh Hart struggles when Kat's not next to him. I think there's floor spacing issues, lots of things. But he was having a bad game. It happens. I was surprised that Thibodeau, who showed an ability to bench Bridges a few days ago, didn't bench Josh Hart. And he plays him, and I think he's a big part of why once he reinserted his starters with 6.5 minutes to go down by one, the Warriors instantly went on an 11-0 run. Now, it wasn't all on Josh. Mikal made some mistakes, specifically him fading away when he's got Steph Curry in the post.
Right.
I mean, you got Steph Curry on you. Beat him, bro.
Right. He is not going to try to defend you
that
hard.
What are you doing?
It's not his game to defend in the post.
I think the Bridges issues are obvious, and you don't need me to send that message. Here's the thing about Josh Hart that's weird. So last year when the Knicks went on their playoff run, he was shooting like 38% from three.
Yep.
He was confident, man. And when Josh Hart has that confidence from three, we all remember that last shot, game six against Philadelphia. Josh Hart rising into the sky, hitting the game-winning three. He plays with a confidence. The last time Josh Hart hit more than one three-pointer in a game was January 8th. That is almost 2 months ago. Since that moment, since that game where Josh hit multiple threes, and at that point he was shooting about 36, 37% from three above his career averages, he is 10 for his last 49 from three to the point where his confidence is broken.
Right.
Now, Josh does a lot of things besides hit threes, obviously, but that part of his game was so important last year when the Knicks went on that run beating Philadelphia. That I'm looking at a broken player right now. I'm looking at a player who's lost his confidence.
You're looking at a broken shooter. And the reason I don't think Tibbs feels comfortable sitting him down is because he's the energy guy. Like, he's the catalyst.
Last night.
I know he wasn't last night, but he's that guy who can always run. Remember last year we had that conversation when Jalen Brunson was asked about him? He's like, yeah, he can just run all day. And he never gets tired. It's why you didn't worry about him playing 45 minutes a night over a month and plus. But I think this feels to me like it's residual from that knee tendonitis, patella, whatever the heck,
certainly
injury
possible.
That never really got clarified that he had about a month ago. Because since then, he hasn't felt like the same offensive player.
Mm-hmm.
I think defensively and hustle and all that stuff, he still does all that. But the offense is shot. It's like he's off a tick and his mechanics, and it's disrupting his ability to score.
And he's also a confidence player. I remember last year, even before that playoff run, there was a brief period of time where he lacked that confidence from the outside.
He got it back. Right.
And he got it back. We all remember the postseason. Right now, he's playing without that confidence. So the two things I would address is, number one, I disagree respectfully with Coach Thibodeau. I thought last night was the night to sit his ass on the bench. Mm. He was terrible. That was the worst game he's played all year long. He was a minus 22 in that game.
Yeah.
I mean, he was bad.
Yeah, but who are you giving the minutes? Like
Deuce McBride. I would have kept Deuce in the game.
Yeah, but Deuce isn't giving you the same hustle, rebounding, all that other good stuff.
I think he can. I mean, not the same rebounder, but he's certainly flying all over the place. Plus, he stretches out the floor a little bit because he's actually a threat. They had a three-point shot, which right now Josh Hart isn't. It's not perfect because Deuce wasn't playing a lights out either. I'm just saying, like, Thibodeau has shown I'll bench a guy when need be. He's benched Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I think the issues with Mikal Bridges are very obvious. I just think right now, in this moment, you don't need me to tell you. Because I think once I start saying it, there's like a glimmer in my voice.
Yeah. But
so I'm going to let you guys say it.
I think the other thing, I mean, forget the Bridges thing.
Yeah.
But what I think we're seeing from this Knicks team is that if they're not on all cylinders clicking, so Brunson, Cat, who's obviously not available, Josh Hart, OG, they're beatable. Right? If everybody's not clicking, we saw this 2 weeks ago when Jalen Brunson had a bad day. They lose those games. Right, they can't afford to not be all hitting on the same cylinders at the same time. Other teams can get away with it because they have someone takes over. And Brunson does this every now and then, but we haven't seen it regularly this season. Your star goes and scores 45 or scores 50. You're not getting that from them this year.
And credit to OG. OG was the reason they were in this game. I mean, they actually had a lead in the first half, but you could kind of tell it was not a comfortable one. Is that Josh Hart criticism fair, Tommy?
I'll never criticize Josh Hart.
Mm. Why?
Because
he's 10 for his last 49 from three. Like, those are numbers.
Because he could get buckets. He's basically an automatic 10 to 15 points every single night.
Not last night.
He had one bad game, if you want to say he had a bad game. He can bring a lot of things to the table.
If I
want to
say he had
defense
a bad game.
And hustle. Josh Hart is the least of any kind of issue on the floor on a given night.
His last two games against Miami and Golden State, he's 4 for his last 20 from the field, 1 for his last 9.
The shot from outside is not there right now, but he could still get to the basket probably better than anybody not named Jalen Brunson on the entire team. He's great in the fast break. So Josh Hart just brings a million things, and he's asked to do a million things.
Is this positive Tommy on the Knicks?
It's not positive Tommy. I just love Josh Hart's game so much that...
He shot 12%, scored 2 points.
And he's like, you could argue he had a bad game. Yeah, I can argue that. I can attempt to argue that.
Yeah, but I'm not going to come on the air and say somebody went 0 for 4 last night and say, is this so-and-so a problem? You're entitled to that opinion. I just don't share that opinion.
I don't think he's a problem. I think
his three-point shot has lost confidence since January. Yeah. That's a fact. That's not me making it up.
But my point is that he brings so much other things to the table.
Not
and
last
I think
night.
He knows that the shots were not falling for the entire team last night in the fourth quarter.
Nah, but it's more than that. He was bad last night. Like, OG Anunoby wasn't bad last night.
OG's been great. The first two games he was back wasn't great, but he's been sensational.
I know, but I'm just pointing out that last night was a night in which he was a problem. And I would have benched him. And Tom Thibodeau shows that willingness to do it. If he's willing to bench Mikal Bridges.
But I think there's certain guys that he won't. And Josh is probably one of them.
I think it contributed them to losing last night.
Maybe.
Honestly.
Maybe.
It's weird to think. They were down by a point with 6.5 minutes to go when OG was at the line for those two free throws.
Mm-hmm.
He makes the changes, goes back to his starters, and the Warriors answered on an 11-0 run. It was one of those weird games where, you know how great the Knicks have been in close games? They've been awesome in close games. I don't even know what to call you last night's game because it was close until it wasn't. Like, with 6 minutes to go, it's a one-point game.
Yeah.
And then you blink, and they're down by 12.
He left the bench in too long. That was the reason they lost.
The bench did a better job than the starters, though. Remember, the bench left the floor with them down by a point in this game.
I understand that.
Now,
but
I'm not complaining about going back to Brunson and going back to OG.
That's
obviously,
what I'm saying. I think OG was out there with the bench, but Shamet Payne, who I like a lot, I like the bench, but I thought I would have went back to the starters a little bit quicker. And normally he does that, and we criticize him for not doing that. Can I point out two things here? First one, and I'm not one of these back-in-the-day NBA thing, but this needs to be said. The idea that Steph Curry can just skip around a basketball court, the stupid...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Rhys Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mouthpiece hanging out. Can somebody just like knock this guy in the face for once? I'm serious. Enough already.
He's the most beloved NBA player.
I don't care.
In the game.
He comes to Madison Square Garden. He dances around. He skips around. He's hitting shots from the fifth row. He's having a good old time like he's at Central Park. Could somebody knock this guy for once and put him on his ass?
When you come to the Great White Way, you got to put on a show.
That's right.
And that's what
I'm all for the show. Guess what's part of the show? Hitting him, because Draymond Green has no problem doing something like that. So I'd like to see somebody put this guy on his ass for once.
1998.
Yeah. But once in a while, Teak, though, it's okay to be 98.
But nobody's going
to
do it.
Because he's just allowed to just dance around, skip around, be comfortable on a basketball court. I don't care.
Who on your team specifically is doing that?
So I used to.
Okay, OG's not doing it. Josh isn't doing it. Mitchell's not doing it.
Campaign could do it.
Campaign played 3 minutes. Campaign. No, he played 10. But what do you know what I mean? Brunson's not doing it. Precious isn't doing it.
I like when the 8th or 9th guy does it so they get suspended.
Who the hell is doing this?
I want my 8th, 9th, 10th guy to do it so they could get suspended. That always happened with the Heat and the Bulls against the Knicks.
You do not have a Ken Danico on your staff. Sorry.
I expect more from you, Tommy. That was a very lazy, back in my day, kind of opinion.
No,
usually don't do that. You usually go the other way, so I'm surprised that
you
just wasted
our time. No, because you know why? When Trae Young does it, he's this, he's that. But when Steph Curry does it, it's Steph Curry. Everybody loves Steph Curry.
Trae Young comes off as a jerk.
So does Curry.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
He comes off like he's
He comes like an arrogant jackass that's just allowed to skip around a basketball court and shoot threes and have his mouthpiece hanging out half the game. And nobody does anything.
You know why? Because he's so good at it.
He's the best, man.
Because everybody thinks he's so likable. Give me the difference between Trae Young and Steph Curry as far as likability. They both do the same thing on a basketball court.
What else do you want to
complain about?
The
other thing is this, and there are times when I'm laying in bed and I think about the show, and I go, because Evan likes to lead Sean and I to water sometimes, and occasionally we drink, sometimes we don't. Evan said something last week when you were out, Tiki, and it struck me last night. Like a lightning bolt hit my brain.
That was like 2 weeks ago.
Evan asked me a question, and he did it in that
last week.
Was it last Monday? You were meeting like a prime minister somewhere.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Evan asked me a question, And I didn't have an answer for it, and then I realized what he wanted me to say yesterday, or what he was implying.
Go ahead.
Evan implied on the radio last week that Mikal Bridges is not playing hard, not fighting through screens because of his consecutive game streak. He didn't say it. He implied it. He wanted me to say it. But he's implying that. He's implying that Mikal Bridges is not playing hard because he used to say this about Carlos Beltran, that steel
that's
streak.
That's cold-blooded.
And it didn't hit me till last night. So the floor is yours, Evan. Is that what you were implying?
No, what I would say is I wasn't implying anything. There's a lot of times in which I admit I don't know an answer. I ask a question because maybe you, Teak, or maybe you, Tommy, or Sean have the answer. What I was saying about Mikal Bridges is that I watched him in Brooklyn. I watched him every minute of his time in Brooklyn. Yeah. I've watched him in New York with the Knicks, and he's different. He plays differently. He's afraid of physicality. It's obvious. Yes, with the Knicks. He doesn't fight through screens the way he did in Brooklyn. And even on that like Steph Curry fadeaway that we talked about, which led to a Steph Curry three like 5 seconds later, it's like he's afraid of contact. So I raise my hand, and I'm dead honest when I say this. I don't know the answer.
You think he's hurt?
I don't know. And I gave theories, and one of the theories I had was, is it the consecutive game streak? Is it the fact that he's played so many minutes in so many games? But I'll be the first to tell you, Teak, I don't know the answer. All I can supply you is the information. Because Sean and I are very rare. Keith McPherson, too, we're very rare. Being a diehard Net fan helps us in this conversation because, unlike you, Tommy, no offense, you didn't watch him with the Nets.
Right, so you've seen it.
I did. I watched him. And I'm telling you an observation that I think is undeniable. Right, Sean?
Yeah, no
doubt
about it.
He's a different player. And so what I'm asking, and maybe you have a theory, Teak, as an athlete, why is he different? Is it the amount of games he's played? I don't know the answer. So I promise you, Tommy, I wasn't trying to lead you anywhere. I was literally asking what I think is a good question because I don't know the answer. I mean, I've watched him in both places. He's different.
What's his minute allocation been with the Knicks? Is it over 40? Is it 41?
By the way, I'll give you that answer, but first I do want to remind you, you're listening to us here on WFAN, WFAN-FM, WFAN-FM-HD1 New York. It's an Odyssey sports station. So as far as how many minutes he's played this year with the Knicks compared to the past?
I'm asking this specifically because if he's not used to 40-plus minutes every night, I know I only played 35 last night, but I don't know, I haven't kept track of what is, you know, the season has been for him. It might be just a attrition thing, like a physical thing.
Let me give you the answer. So his career average is 33.2 minutes. Yeah. And remember, the guy's never missed a game.
Right, and that's basically what he did last night. But what's this season's average?
This season, Mikal Bridges leads the league in minutes per game at 37.7.
Right.
Is that the answer?
Maybe.
Okay.
But it doesn't seem egregious. It doesn't seem that far removed from what he's historically done. But again, I don't play basketball, so I don't know what 4 minutes a night is, especially if it's crunch time minutes and it's intensity and it wears you out. But possibly it's that.
Okay.
You're just getting used to something different.
I think that it's fair, and I guess I would ask you, Tommy, I think you trust that I am telling you the truth about him in Brooklyn, that he played differently, he was more physical, he was different. So if you at least take the leap of faith that I'm not lying to everybody.
Absolutely. No, I know you're not lying.
I will ask the same question again, not leading you to water, the same way I asked Tiki, I don't know the answer. Why do you think he's different?
I don't know.
I agree, I don't know either.
Yeah. I also think that he's under the critical eye here because of how many draft picks that were given up, and I think he's getting scrutinized a little bit.
But Tommy.
He's invisible in big games.
I think it's easy to ignore that, though. In fact, from a player standpoint, if somebody's saying,
From
Mikal's standpoint, if somebody says, well, we gave up this to get you, okay, whatever, I'm here.
Yeah, but that doesn't...
I don't think that he's feeling pressure because of what it costs for him to come to the Knicks.
Yeah, unless you're implying he's playing differently, I'm making an observation about a player that I've watched basically play every game he's played since Phoenix traded him. With the Nets and the Knicks, I've watched every game, and I'm noticing a different player. And so you're saying the pressures of what the Knicks gave up for him is causing him to be less physical?
No, I'm saying the scrutiny towards him is because of a lot of the picks that they gave up. Here's the thing.
Forget the scrutiny. I'm offering no scrutiny based on anything. I'm telling you an observation about what I saw. Why is that happening?
We had an argument on the air that when you said Bridges was better than Brunson, and at the time you had a good argument for that, and now look where we are.
I watch it every night.
When you say why he's not being a certain way, I don't have an answer.
The thing about Mikal Bridges, to walk back to that moment, is him and Jalen were very similar. They were both good role players on good teams. They got traded, in Bridges' case, Jalen obviously is a free agent, with a team in which they were handing them the keys.
Right.
The Knicks handed Jalen Brunson the keys, and the guy literally became the king.
Mm-hmm.
Mikal Bridges was handed the keys, and in 27 games with the Nets after that trade, he averaged 26 per game. Like, let that sink in, because I think Knicks fans are like, no, there's no way that happened. He shot 38% from three. He averaged 26 per game. So for that small sample size, I thought, wow, the same thing's happening to Mikal that happened to Jalen. They handed him the keys, and here we go.
Yeah, but you can't.
Then he failed.
But you can't expect that to happen here with the Knicks.
No, no, I'm sorry. I'm answering his point on why I thought 3 years ago was better than Jalen Brunson or up there with Jalen Brunson.
Got it.
Because
got
of
it.
What I saw in that 37-game sample size. Once the following year came around, to me, and this is where you think it's anti-Knicks, it's not, I promise, he was exposed that he's not a lead guy. Because with a greater sample size of 82 games, he wasn't that. He was not nearly the same guy. He wasn't the alpha he needed to be. You're right. He don't need to be an alpha here. All I need from him, all you need from him, is to fight through freaking screens and play tough. And not fade away on Steph Curry. And not be afraid of contact. He is averaging, listen to this for a second, because sometimes numbers will help. He is averaging 1.1 free throw attempt per game. Last year, he averaged 3.9. The year before that, 6.6. He is afraid of contact. Why? I don't know. And you offered a fair reason. It's the minutes. I don't know. I'm just telling you, I ain't lying to you. I watched him there. I'm watching him here. He's different. Can't tell you the reason. I wish I could. If I could, I wouldn't tell Tom Thibodeau because that would help the Knicks. But Tommy would, and you guys would. But there's clearly a difference. And if you're arguing with that, you're arguing with reality.
He's not comfortable. He's not comfortable playing with his friends in front of his friends. He was allowed to break off from Villanova.
Yeah, but that's not fair.
How do you, is that not a rational reason?
No, because it just seems like a fan reason. That doesn't seem like the real reason. Oh, I'm just not comfortable playing with these guys. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I think there's a lot of locker room pressure within that he's one of the Villanova guys. And I think he comes in and he goes from being the guy in Brooklyn, where he wasn't the guy in Phoenix necessarily. And now he's like, okay, this is your team. And he's just, I think he's more passive and more hesitant being with the Knicks and being with his former teammates and friends now that it's their team and he just has to blend in. I don't think he's fully comfortable. And maybe it takes 2 years to get fully comfortable.
No, I don't buy that one. I'm with Tiki.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you know what I will say, though, to Sean's point? I could see where... Like, even for me, like, on the radio, and I don't have to tell you who the person is, I'm not always comfortable necessarily talking to them on the radio, but I'm more comfortable maybe talking to Evan on the radio. Maybe when Mikal's around Josh Hart, he is not as comfortable. I'm just throwing things out there because we're trying to come up with the difference.
So it all comes back to Josh Hart. He's a bully. I was just criticizing his three-point shooting. You're saying he bullies Mikal
Bridges.
No, I'm
not saying. I'm just saying that some people, you know, panic around people, whatever. They just get, like, uncomfortable.
Yeah, look, it's got to change. What's interesting about Mikal Bridges is that he has his moments. Like, even last night he had a moment. That block on Steph?
Yeah.
That was a great defensive play. He's had moments. It's just he doesn't do it consistently, and his lack of physicality is alarming. And if I had to guess, after this nice, cordial conversation, I would probably lean to what you're saying, that I think when you play every single game and you play a lot of minutes, that maybe just over the course of all of those years, you just become tired.
Yeah, you're just worn out, and you're realizing, we got 20 games left, or whatever it is they have left. You got to conserve a little bit here, because you know it's not going away. There's no relief. Tom Thibodeau is going to do what Tom Thibodeau does, which means you're going to play 38 minutes, and especially as it gets closer, and then you get into the postseason, you're going to be playing 40-plus minutes.
Absolutely.
So it might be just... I got in my mind, because LeBron James did this. Now, he's not LeBron James. I'm not even trying to compare them. But LeBron James, as he got older in his career, you saw him just conserving.
Right.
It becomes a philosophy for how you play the game and play it at a high level for a long time. I'm talking seasons and years. And so maybe that's what's occurring. Because he's just not used to doing it this way. So
speaking of conserving,
now
You know who conserved last night? The Warriors. They were on a back-to-back. You could tell Steph was... kind of biding his time. And one other thing about Steph Curry, and I didn't even realize this until they mentioned it on the broadcast last night, that Steph Curry has only lost one game at Madison Square Garden. He's 13-1 in his career at MSG. The game he lost, I will never forget, because it was right around this time of year. You could look up the date. Steph scored like 50 in the game. He was unbelievable. And I was at a bar down in Florida because I went on one of my spring training trips. And I was at a bar with just like a bunch of senior citizens. I'm watching the Knick Warrior game and I am into it, bro. I'm drinking. I'm having a good time. Hotel bar. I don't got to drive anywhere. And when I started talking to the old people, I made up a different persona.
What do you mean?
I created a different character. I was like from Alabama. I was on like some kind of business trip. I figured I'm just going to live a different life. And they were asking me like, why are you so into the game? And I'm like, oh, I hate the Knicks. That was the one thing I was truthful right. about. Hate the Knicks. And Steph dropped. And you can look up the box score on this game. I think he scored like 54. And the Knicks won. The one time Steph lost, he dropped a 50-burger at Madison Square Garden. And I'll never forget. It must have been a late February because it was right around spring training. You find the day, Sean?
February 27, 2013, Curry dropped 54 points. Carmelo had 35, and J.R. Smith hit the tie-breaking shot with 110.
J.R. Smith.
J.R. Oh, God.
109-105.
That game pissed me off, man. I was having a good time, though. Real quick, Anthony is calling from Garden City. How are you, Anthony?
What's up, Ant?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good.
I just got that. Wanted to bring a comparison. I'm a Yankees fan, but I brought up a comparison when I heard the OMG song, like that good feel.
Yeah,
kind of reminded me of the Who Let the Mets Out back in the day when you know, with Piazza and all the I don't know. I just had that good feel to it.
You know what? You know what's so different about that? In
my
opinion,
who let the Mets out?
Who let the dogs out? Who let the Mets out? Who let the dogs and who let the Mets out was completely created by Met management and the PA system. OMG was organic. And so when I hear who let the dogs out, who let the Mets out, and that is, of course, a team that won the National League championship, so they went further than this team. I hear who let the dogs out, I get a stomachache. I hate it. But when I hear OMG, we played it at the top of the show. If you want to rewind on the Odyssey app, we had a tribute and a funeral to the OMG era New York Mets.
Yeah,
I got emotional thinking about it. So I have a better feeling towards OMG than I do Who Let the Dogs Out.
Even though you actually have a National League championship from Who Let the Dogs Out?
Yeah, because it wasn't organic. Like, the team was great. I have a great feeling towards the team.
Yeah, but what's the difference? I mean, give the team credit. Right?
I do. I love the team. I don't love the song.
I don't. Oh, so you just you hate the song?
Yes.
You hate. If you would have picked any other song that was hip and whatever relevant at that moment, it would have been different.
If they lost to the Tigers in the World Series, he would have no issue with Who Let the Dogs Out. This many years later, it's because they lost to the Yankees.
Absolutely not. And I'm going to prove that because today at 4 o'clock,
the Yankees were the actual dogs.
Yeah, they were.
They were a dynasty.
Yeah. And they did damage on the Mets.
They did. They did damage on everybody. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we're continuing Almost Champions, the most beloved New York team that are almost champions. And obviously, the 2000 Mets are going to be on that list. So we're going to talk about them at some point. Maybe not today. I have no idea. I don't know what number 9 through 7 will be on this list. I wouldn't want to hear Who Let the Dogs Out. Mm-hmm. Like, when Tommy plays the highlight to honor the 2000 Mets, I will be verklempt. I'll talk glowingly about them. But the one thing I don't want to hear is the song. So I promise you, it has nothing to do with the Yankees.
You're absolutely no fun. You really are.
What do you mean?
That was a fun song.
Oh, stop.
I was blasting that in the car. I think I was like maybe a senior in high school, give or take. I was driving. I love that. What do you mean? Who Let the Mets Out? I love that.
No, did you?
No, it's way better than the Mojo Rising.
Oh, you're dead wrong.
Please.
Mojo Rising gets me conflicted.
You're no fun. You're no fun.
Why am I
no
fun?
You're the guy that goes to a wedding and sits at the table the whole time and doesn't dance.
You think most Met fans agree that For those that are our age or older, because obviously if you're younger, this is all like a history lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You think most Met fans like Who Let the Dogs Out more than L.A. Woman?
No.
Jim Morrison?
More people like Who Let the Mets Out when they added the Mets part to that.
Better than Mr. Mojo Rising.
Yes.
And here's the difference,
I'll be
by the way.
On the right side of history on that
Teak,
one.
Teak, here's why you'd agree with me.
I don't think I heard that one.
Mojo Rising was
I mean, I know the actual song, but...
Right. Well, they used to play it like every time they would win a game.
Yeah.
But the reason they started playing it is because the leader of that team, Robin Ventura, loved it, and it became their rallying song. Who Let the Mets Out was literally created by Mets PR.
By the PR people.
Well, because it was a popular song.
Right.
So Mojo Rising was more like OMG.
Yes.
Even though it wasn't by one of the players.
100%. We'll get to your calls next. Opinions on Mikal Bridges, Josh Hart, the New York Knicks, and Jose Iglesias leaving New York to sign with the San Diego Padres. Coming up in about a half hour, we will hear numbers 9 through 7 in the rankings of Almost Champions. the most beloved New York almost champions. Yesterday, the 0-1 Devils, the 0-3 New Jersey Nets, and the 0-2 New Jersey Nets were honored. We'll see which three teams get the honor today. By the way, you may not be aware of this, but the New Jersey Devils are collapsing.
Mm. I mean, geez. Yeah, you keep saying so, and it's true.
Yesterday's loss was so brutal. They erased a 2-0 deficit. They came back, looked like they were going to get a big point, and then they gave up the game-winning goal with how many seconds left, Sean?
3.4 seconds left.
Lovely.
It was a bad loss for the Devils. We don't know the status of Jack Hughes. And if you wake up this morning or you want to look this afternoon, I'll save you the time. The New York Rangers are in a playoff spot. The New York Rangers are currently the second wild card team. And so if the season ended today, they would be matched up against the Washington Capitals, who they play tonight at Madison Square Garden. A little playoff preview.
Shawnee might buy a ticket another hour and a half.
Are you thinking about it?
I might be a big game Bob. I'm doing the old, will ticket prices drop to a price I'm comfortable with?
I don't think they will drop, right? A Wednesday night, the Rangers are hot, Ovechkin's in town.
Yeah, with Ovechkin. We'll see. We'll see. I might pull the trigger.
Let me know. Would you want me to come with you?
You're going to come?
I would consider it. If little the prices drop enough, I got to do a Rico tonight. Forget it.
Little eating more ash inside the
what
garden?
What are you doing a Rico on tonight? Jose Iglesias?
I mean, there's a list of things, bro.
OMG.
Jose Iglesias, Jose Quintana, Kodai Senga's spring start the other day.
Oh, you haven't done one recently.
Well, Sunday was the last one.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah, I got a few things I got to get to.
By recently, Sunday? I mean in the last day.
Yeah.
You do them so regularly.
That's right.
Sunday, you were still on vacation.
Yeah, when I got back, I got off the plane. I landed at 9:30 in White Plains.
Look at this. We gave him the credit for being connected and working and whatever.
Well, it was after I got home.
The minute you get home.
Well, it wasn't the minute. I got home at 9:30, walked into my house at 10, put my kids to sleep. I'd say at about 11:30-ish, so about an hour and a half after, late Sunday night, I did a Rico. But my trip's over at that point.
No, go relax. It's technically you're still
sleep.
Even if your trip's over, you're on vacation. You wake up Monday.
I had to do a Rico. But I'll do one tonight, so I can't go to the Ranger game tonight. I apologize. Maybe another time.
Maybe another time.
Yeah, maybe another time. I would go, honestly.
You just had through a whole stink about Alex Ovechkin and how this is crazy. It's not fair to Gretzky. You have a chance to go see him tonight with your friend Sean.
Yeah.
And instead you want to go talk about Iglesias with Pete Hoffman.
Yes. That's true. Yeah, you got that one right. You got it. Let's go to Anthony in Copaic. What's up, Anthony?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to make two quick Met points.
Yes.
So, Jose Iglesias, he gets the deal. I'm happy for him. I think the Mets couldn't sign him because identity, believe it or not. I think he was a big part of, you know, last year's identity, OMG Mets. But, you know, the brutal truth is that OMG Mets got to the NLCS and lost. So 2025, I think they need their own identity. I think ownership knows that. I think the front office knows that. And I think the identity of this team moving forward needs to be young, youthful, and I think we have it. I think Acuna is a big part of that. As much as I've been down on the squirrel for the past few years, man, I think he's going to have a nutty year.
I like what you did there. Right. I don't think the Mets think about it the way you did and even the way I framed it at the top of the show, which is, hey, that was 2024. This has to be 25. Mm-hmm. I think David Stearns and the Mets look at it in a very nuts and bolts way, which is, he's 35 years old. He's coming off a career year. By the way, most of Major League Baseball agreed because the best he could get was a minor league deal.
Yep.
And we feel better about Luis Angel Acuna and Brett Beatty.
Right.
We just do. Or even before that, they felt better about what's his name when he got hurt?
Mauricio?
No, I heard you forgot his name. The guy's out for the year with the torn shoulder.
Madrigal.
Yeah. Right. So I think the Mets
He wasn't really here. I mean, what was he here for, 2 weeks?
No, but they chose.
Oh, I know, but I'm just saying he was here for 2 weeks.
Right.
It's okay that you forgot his name.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. So I don't think
No, it's not okay. Right. If you're going to be the Mets podcast guy on vacation, you got to know Nick Madrigal's name.
Did you do a Rico on Nick Madrigal?
I did.
Okay. Oh, boy. So I can't forget.
Well, I'm a human. I forget stuff all the time. I mean, especially as you get older. I've realized that. My dad and I used to make fun of, lovingly, his father, my grandpa, the great-grandpa Bernie, who's no longer with us, because he would mispronounce every name, right? So the Mets had a pitcher named Jason Hockamy, and he would call him Jason Jacob. Like, he got everything wrong.
Was it spelled with a J?
Yes.
Okay, of course.
So me and my dad would always laugh, like, grandpa, he screws up the names. My dad is now become him, where he screws up names all the time, too. And I don't make fun of him because I know I'm getting there. And I am. Like, there are little things that happen over time where I'm like, here we go. I'm becoming Grandpa Birdie. So forgetting Nick Madrigal may seem small. It's totally coming. By the time I'm 55 doing the recall.
What's that guy's name? Nick Magic, Magic.
No, I just go, the first baseman, the shortstop.
The kid, the tight end, he's very good.
You only have to just remember Rico Bronya's name if you're still doing
it. That's right. That'll be the only name I remember. Let's go to Josh in Sheepshead Bay. How you doing, Josh?
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking the call.
What's up, dude?
The Stephen Curry game, I'm so happy you brought that up because February 27th, so that's actually my birthday. And that day, that was my 18th birthday.
Wow.
And I remember exactly where I was. You know, I'm 30 now, but I remember exactly where I was. I was in Coney Island, and I had Stephen Curry on my fantasy basketball team. And I just wanted to say, if you look at his Wikipedia and you go to the legacy tab, it's actually considered to be, I think it was a Guardian reporter that said that exact game at the Garden is considered to be like a major turning point in basketball, possibly even like the start of the 3-point era. Hmm. And Evan, to something you said, it was a few weeks back, you were talking about the quality of basketball, and especially compared to college basketball.
Yep.
And in my opinion, can you just like elaborate on that? Because I feel like the quality's gotten so much worse since that game, if you use that as the time frame. So thank you, guys.
The quality of the NBA game, you mean?
The quality of basketball is not, in general, it's not as good as college basketball.
Right. Oh, no. It is. It's a lot better. But I think where people get argumentative or upset is they think me saying that means it's better or more entertaining. I understand the fan who finds college basketball more entertaining. It's more the actual basketball. If you just watch it, is clearly better. They're more skilled. They're bigger. They're stronger. They're faster. They hit more shots. They're better at everything. So that one can't be argued. But what can be argued is what you find more entertaining. And I totally understand finding the college game more entertaining.
Right.
What I was really curious about was that day, February 27, 2013.
Yeah, I found what he was just referring to.
That game is considered the beginning of the three-point revolution?
Analysts have referred to him as the Michael Jordan of the three-point era, saying that what he did for the three-point shot was what Jordan did for the slam dunk.
Yeah, I got that.
Even though it was more, whatever.
Julius Erving for the slam dunk. Yeah, come on, man!
And so the Guardians, which is a British periodical, Robert O'Connell cites Curry's February 27th, 2013 game against the New York Knicks, mm-hmm. in which he made 11 of 13 shots.
It was unbelievable.
From behind the arc en route to a 54 performance as the start of the three-point era.
Yeah. I could see that because that's like the real beginning. Because remember Steph early in his career. We all know his greatness now. Beginning of his career, he couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah.
And there were concerns about that.
Yeah, he had ankle injuries.
Ankle issues. And so you could see the Warriors bubbling, mm-hmm. and you could see Steph bubbling, but could they ever put it all together? And I don't know if necessarily that's the game where it all came together, but I do know that for many of us, for those that were in the building, for those like our last caller who remembers where he was at 18 years old, for me as a geek, leaving a Met Cardinal spring training game and mm-hmm. going to a bar and creating a fake identity, it was such an impactful game, we all remember.
Not a fake ID. You were in there illegally.
No, not a fake ID. A fake identity. Yeah, I became a different person. It was one of those basketball games you do remember. So was it the beginning of the three-point revolution? I don't know. But I think it may have been the breakout for Steph. Doing it at Madison Square Garden, mm-hmm. doing it against the Knicks, doing it on national TV. Like, it was a big freaking deal. But what I find ironic about the whole thing, if that's even the right choice of words, is that that's the only game he lost at the Garden. Right.
He even won a game when he was with Davidson at the Garden.
Yes, yes. He used to play once a year. He said that in the post-game interview last night where, playing at the Garden is really special. We did in college once a year. And obviously in the NBA, as a guy on the Western Conference team, it's once a year. So
People forget that, how ridiculous he was at Davidson. I think they knocked off Georgetown or whatever. But they were talking about that game last night on the broadcast as Curry was hitting threes. So, you know, national game, we of course have to bend the knee to the other team.
But you won the game.
No. I understand that. But I'm saying that, but they weren't talking about it that way.
They were just talking about him shooting 3-point, like knocking.
But you know what I find weird about that? Like, The Knicks won the game, which at the end of the day is all one should care about.
Yeah,
it's like
in 2013 they won the game.
The Bernard King Christmas Day game. They lost that game. So it's funny how we remember like these moments, but we forget who actually won. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do.
Like, the Knicks won that game. Three-point revolution, that's great. You guys got to leave. Like, I left the bar pissed off that night. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's the point, though. It's big. The moment was bigger than the game. I mean, Steph Curry's 11 for 14 and that, or 11 for 13, I should say, in 54-point game was bigger than the game itself.
Yeah, because he's changed basketball.
It mattered less that they lost that game. What mattered was that he created this image that kids want to now do.
No, you're right. It's just funny because when Bernard King, obviously I know about this from the past. I wasn't around for it. But Bernard King on Christmas Day scored 60 in a game against the Nets, the New Jersey Nets at Madison Square Garden. And it's like, oh my God, Bernard King, 60 points. The Nets won the game. That always makes me laugh. Like, doesn't the winner get to write the story?
Usually.
And in the case of the NBA, the answer is no, actually. It's, did you have an epic performance?
And it's been so long that I think that we forget this, and it's one of those what-ifs in basketball, but what if the Warriors selected Jordan Hill and Steph Curry has been a Knick the last, you know, X amount of years? Always that tie-in.
Did you fall into that trap on Twitter last night?
What do you mean?
There was a thing going around. I engaged in this. What is your biggest what-if in sports? And so I saw it, and I was like, oh, God, this is such a sucker thing, but I'm going to fall into it. And so I started thinking about it, and I was like, A-Rod to the Mets. That's my biggest what-if. But then it started expanding. I'm like, wait a second. That's not it. It's Kyrie Irving getting injured against the Bucks. Oh, wait a second. That's not it. It's Beltran not taking the 0-2 pitch from Adam Wainwright. Oh, wait a second. That's not it. What if Armando Benitez closes out the Yankees in game one, or Timo Perez runs the bases? So that's your biggest what if? Jordan Hill picked by the Warriors, you get Steph? Is that your answer?
Do you have one?
Because I have like five.
Like, who's thought of this? I gotta ever think about it.
It's weird.
Biggest.
There's certain draft picks. Sean, give me the name here. Who was the guy the Giants selected right after Jonathan Ogden? Like, there's a certain play. He stunk.
William Joseph?
No, I don't think it was Joseph. He was around for like a second or two. It's just one of those things where if the Knicks had Steph Curry, you brought up a lot of good moments there that I agree with you on, Evan. But this in a situation, think about where the Knicks would have been if Steph Curry. Now, they may not have drafted him. I have no idea. I don't remember back to
they would have drafted him.
You think so?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Is that your biggest what if moment?
Yeah.
Tommy?
I mean, Jordan Hill's nothing, and Steph Curry's one of the all time greats. Right. Brutal.
Mine's easy. What if Trey Junkin hadn't dribbled the ball back?
Dude, I was going to guess you. I was going to guess that.
The NFC wildcard game against the San Francisco 49ers, and we'd kick that field goal and gone to Tampa and beat them.
Yeah.
That's one of my biggest ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get you. Do you think you guys would have won, though?
Yeah.
You would have gotten to the Super Bowl.
I think we would have gotten.
You would have beaten.
We were so good that year.
You would have beaten your brother, and you would have taken on the Raiders.
The Buccaneers were great against defending the pass, which is why they destroyed the Raiders. That's all they could do. I mean, think about that team. It was Tim, what's his name? I'm forgetting his name. He's Hall of Famer. And Jerry Rice was on that team.
Tim Brown.
Like, they were, all they did was throw the ball. Even the running back, they threw the ball around the field. We would have run the ball down their throat.
That what if is so crazy.
Yeah. Is that yours as a Giant fan?
Well, it is, but think about it playing out. Tiki retires possibly with a Super Bowl ring. Mm. His brother doesn't have one. But that's the last Super Bowl the Giants see because they ride it out with Kerry Collins and never get Eli Manning
in
2004.
Point.
That's a great point, actually.
That's a great,
it
great
does
point.
Change history in a way.
Right. If Kerry Collins has a Super Bowl title.
He's still there.
Only 30. One?
There's whatever. No way 2 years later they get rid of him.
It takes a lot of courage to get rid of a guy who won a Super Bowl for you a few years earlier.
Yeah, so that's the biggest what-if moment.
I like your what-if better than Tommy's, and I'll tell you why, Tom. Because you did something that I hate in sports. You made an excuse.
Mm.
And so what I mean by that is I was at that draft that night. Why I went, I still don't know. I needed to see the Nets draft Terrence Williams.
Mm.
But I was at the draft that night.
How long did he play?
Not that long. I thought he was going to be LeBron for a second.
Oh, God.
So I'm at the draft that night, and you see the way things are falling. You see Ricky Rubio go to the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they followed up with Johnny Flynn, and you're like, what the hell are they doing? And then the Warriors take Stephen Curry. And then, obviously, you mentioned it, the Knicks take Jordan Hill. Do you know who went right after? Like, the guy you could have taken? No, you didn't get Steph, and that would have been the ultimate prize, clearly. But do you know who went right after Jordan Hill that you could have drafted. And I would argue, if you look at that draft, Steph Curry is number one. James Harden is probably number two.
Yeah, Harden definitely too.
The guy who's third is the guy I'm about to mention.
I don't think so.
So a very good player.
I think the guy who went first is better, but DeMar DeRozan went next.
Yes!
I think Blake Griffin was a better player than DeMar DeRozan, fine.
By the way, Blake's not playing anymore.
By the way,
DeMar still is.
Two out of the top three played on the Nets.
No, I know. Trust me, I know. But wouldn't you also be mad at the Knicks that they didn't draft DeMar DeRozan, but instead they drafted a stiff like Jordan Hill?
Yeah.
Instead of thinking about the Warriors making the right choice, or really the Timberwolves screwed up, because remember, they drafted two point guards in Johnny Flynn and Ricky Rubio. They could have drafted Steph. They're the ones that should regret it more than anybody.
I mean, Flynn was great at Syracuse. He was horrible in the pros.
But you guys screwed up as my
point. No doubt about it. There was a stretch, a long stretch, and this is why the Knicks were so bad. If you go back to all their drafts and you see some of the players that were drafted right before their pick selection or right after, it'll drive you nuts. We would have basically an all-star team if the butterfly effect.
Another guy in that draft, by the way, very good, still helping a team, is Drew Holiday.
Drew Holiday, yep.
Yeah, they had some good players in that draft.
How is he still playing?
And he still plays. Still can defend a little bit. Yeah. Let's go to Kendrick in Suffern, New York. How are you, Kendrick?
Kendrick, what's up?
Hey, guys. I remember that draft, Evan, also. That was the night that Michael Jackson passed away.
I know.
I remember that.
You are so right, man. I was outside of Madison Square Garden. I was with a friend of mine. We were having a drink. We found out the news, and you're right. That's a surreal. I think that's why I remember being at that draft, simply because we all got the shocking news of Michael Jackson dying. Good call.
Yeah, that was a crazy day. But I did want to call, and I actually do a 180 here and defend Mikal Bridges and the Knicks. But before I do, I do have to take my one shot. I was thinking that the trend that you were picking up on last night, Evan, was the crowd seems to curry favor for the opposing teams a little bit towards the end of the night, and that's becoming a trend too at Madison Square Garden. So I'm just curious if they're concerned come playoff time if they will have home court advantage no matter where they play. But that's another story for another. You know, you brought up Drew Holiday, and he's a part of Team USA, and as a basketball guy, I think, Evan, you're unfairly criticizing Mikal Bridges for accepting his role. Drew Holiday, Derek White, guys like that, they made Team USA, a team made up of superstars. And sometimes you have to play your role the way the role needs you to play, and that might make you look different. So, like, Jason Tatum, he got criticized all summer because he never got the court because he played the same role that Durant or LeBron would play. So there was no reason to put him on the floor.
Right.
Mikal Bridges with Brooklyn was our guy. Mm-hmm. He was the alpha, or he was supposed to be an alpha, even though we can go on a tangent there. He was given the ball in crunch time. He was told to defend the best player. Now, his role is like the stability on the court. His role was that Iron Man in a Tom Thibodeau offense. His role is not to be the Hart, that's Josh Hart. It's not to be the man, that's Brunson and Kat. And so when he makes big plays at the end of games, whether it's against Ja Morant recently or Vucevic with the block or whoever else it might be, that's where he's supposed to be. So I think when you compare him, even though I love the fact that he's not living up to the expectations that some had, he is doing what he's supposed to do. And I do think we look at what they gave up and what the expectation was. Now,
but Kendrick, there are elements of, like, I get it. He doesn't have that same alpha role. But there are elements of his game that have diminished. Mm-hmm. A simple thing that really can't be displayed with a stat is fighting through screens. He doesn't do it on a consistent basis.
Right, so it's an effort thing as much as it is a production thing.
Yeah, like, and being asked to defend some of the better offensive players in the sport on the wing is a part of why he's here. Yeah. And he's had good moments, but he hasn't been good enough consistently. So there are aspects of what he's being asked to do that he's not doing well enough. And forget the picks. I'm actually going to be the one guy that says, you got to get it out of your mind. You got to forget how much guys get paid, and you got to forget how many picks they gave up. That's for me and Sean to have fodder about in our Nets community. But when you're actually talking about the team, you got to put it out of your mind because it's over. Those picks are gone. They're not coming back. Cat's getting paid a lot of money. It's not going anywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have to look at it as a player, what he's asked to do, and if he's doing well enough. Right now, he's not doing well enough, and he's got to be better.
Real quickly, you're going to have a little homework assignment since you like homework assignments?
Yes.
Okay, the night of that Steph Curry draft, the night Michael Jackson passed away, WFAN archives. I want to know what the lead for Mike and Dog was the next day, because the next day is the Subway Series.
I'm going to guess the lead on Mike and the Mad Dog, the day after the NBA draft, where the Knicks draft Jordan Hill, didn't pass on Steph Curry. Steph was before. The Nets forget they don't exist. Mets-Yankees later that day. This is 2008, right?
2009.
Oh, 2009. Okay, so first year at Yankee Stadium, Citi Field. And Michael Jackson's dead? I don't think there's any question. The lead is Michael Jackson.
Okay, interesting.
No question.
I vividly remember them talking about Michael Jackson like the entire show. Now, obviously, the day before, I think it broke during their show. Mm. So they spent the entire time on it. Obviously, you're talking about
Michael Jackson. That's right. It happened in the middle of the middle of the day.
Exactly. The next day might have been, water war baseball here. Can't run forever.
What would we do if that had happened?
Michael Jackson
died? We talked about Michael Jackson for the entire show.
If it happened in the middle of the show or the next day?
The next day. Either one.
I think in the middle of the show, we would have talked about it.
Yeah,
for a considerable amount of time,
And Farrah Fawcett died the same day.
Is that true?
Yeah.
See, we forgot. At least I forgot.
And quickly, starting pitchers for Mets Yankees the day after Michael Jackson died.
Was the game at Citi or Yankee?
Well, see my Mets Bible.
That would make you remember it.
Yankees-Mets at Citi Field.
A.J. Burnett for the Yankees.
No.
I guess that must have been the next day.
C.C. Sabathia versus Mike Pelfrey.
Really?
The Yankees win 9-1.
I don't think in 2009, other than the Luis Castillo game, I remember anything about the Subway Series in 2009.
A-Rod homer to the game.
Very nice. Very quick break. We'll come back. More of your phone calls at 888-808-1019. Plus, do you remember how about a month ago, Michael Strahan sold his soul to the city of Philadelphia by waving an Eagles flag?
Or to Fox Sports.
Or to Fox Sports, yes. Last night, New York football and basketball fans had a chance to react to Michael Strahan.
Turn, coach.
As he was announced at Madison Square Garden, we will hear what the reaction was. Plus, we'll find out the next three entrants, the next three countdown members of Almost Champions, the most beloved New York Almost Champions. Evan and Tiki on the Fan.